again, it's great to be with you. This has been a great week. I think I remember Martha, as she gave the announcements last week, said if some of you just want to like bring a cot and stay at church all week, you can, because there's so much going on. We had our dinner with the pastors on Monday night, and we're able to spend time with new folks and talk about our mission and vision together. And then, Wednesday night was our Ash Wednesday service, which begins the season of Lent. And that's an important time as we come to even this sermon series today, where we begin to look toward the cross and the events of the life of Jesus that lead to salvation for all of us. And so that was Wednesday, and then Friday night, our young people left on their confirmation retreat, and there's a special service where we wash their feet as symbols of their service and their call to service in the way of Jesus, and then their parents stand before them and anoint them in the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, and it's this entry into adult faith and adult life. And then in just a minute, they'll come and make a decision for themselves to say yes to Jesus, to say yes to that way of life. And we get to be a part of it, to come around them and have in so many ways to be this kind of community that this kind of stuff happens, where young people make important decisions and we join around them in prayer and support and encouragement, cheering them on the whole way. And it's just exciting. I want to tell you just one last thing, that helps kind of talk about and maybe paint a picture of the kind of community that we are all a part of. On Tuesday night, we had planned to run through our Ash Wednesday service, and we never had done this before, just to be ready for the music and all that comes with that, and lots of different people coming together, the choir and the praise bands and lots of different folks. We just wanted to be extra prepared, and we sort of figured out in the midst of that the Little Angels Attic Sale, which Martha mentioned, just was phenomenal this time, had begun putting things together and started taking over this room and this part of the church, which they always do. And then we sort of, in the flow, remembered that also, by the way, on every other Tuesday, we host homeless people who sleep often, most often, in the Cup of Hope Cafe, and they're usually here, so they were here, so we moved them to the back of our sanctuary in the Welcome Center and ate there, and that was all fine, and then realized that we were going to be playing music in there, and those guys usually go to sleep, like at 7:30 or so, 8 o'clock, and we were going to keep them up singing our Jesus songs, and it is what it is. This place was rocking all week. So bottom line, what it comes down to is we ended up giving a concert to a bunch of homeless guys in the back of our sanctuary. That's just like, how does that happen, right? And when you sing about God's power and grace and work in the world, and you sing that over people who've experienced homelessness, man, that just sort of gives you a different perspective. Today I hope that in a very short amount of time that we can start to gain a different perspective on God's work in us and the world. And this series that we launched today is called Eyewitness, because the purpose is to look at the cross, look at the story of Jesus, the events of the crucifixion, from different perspectives, specifically from the perspective of people that we don't often talk about, like the minor characters in the story that people sort of, you just read their names and you hope you pronounce them right, like Caiaphas this morning. And maybe we don't or know just a little about what's going on with them. We're going to look at Jesus and the cross and the events of the crucifixion from their eyes to see how they saw the story, and then compare that to how Jesus lived in the story. And point by point, I think you're going to see this story from a different perspective, sort of as our spiritual discipline for the 40 days leading up to Easter. This is our way of preparing. We're going to come again and again from different perspectives and keep looking, trying to understand so that we get it, so that we feel it, so that we know what this story is about and claim it for ourselves. So I hope if you've been around the church for a while that this will be maybe some new information for some of you. For those of you or maybe for all of us, I hope that the story will come more fully alive. And just as Scott said, that we'll come into the story and be a part of it. And that ultimately we'll be able to see what God is doing in us and in our world in a different way. So today we're going to start with the story with maybe one of the main characters of the minor characters, if that makes sense. This guy who's lurking behind the scenes, the whole story, and throughout the Gospels, his name comes up. His name's Caiaphas, and he's the high priest of the people. He represents God and represents the whole people in a couple different ways. It's been said that this person, maybe more than anybody else, is responsible for Jesus going to the cross. That's a pretty big statement when you think of the people that we often talk about. Judas, who betrayed Jesus for 30 pieces of silver, and Peter, who denied even knowing Jesus, and Pilate, who could have saved Jesus but didn't. But each of these, as we read the gospel story, find maybe as you go back from them, they all have a connection to another person. That if you follow the money and you follow the deception and you follow the scheming behind the scenes, they all lead to this man, Caiaphas. And the high priest was an important role in the life of the people. It was a political role and an economic one, and we could talk a lot more about that. But by the time of Jesus, the high priest both related to the Roman government and sort of felt like it was his job to make sure things stayed kosher, pardon the pun, kosher with the occupying Roman forces, but also had this tremendous religious authority. And the high priest represented the very holiness of God. This person, more than anybody else, should have gotten what God was doing. When it all plays out in front of him, this person's job, his role, his life was about representing the purity and the holiness of God. His clothes, for example, are just a small representation of that. The priests in ancient Israel all wore four different things, four different pieces of their outfit, including priestly undergarments. Can you imagine that? Holy underwear, so to speak. And then the high priest, sorry about that, guys. And then the high priest wore four additional pieces of clothing. One of those was a blue robe that symbolized authority and the robe before God. And the tassels were blue and violet and scarlet. And then he wore a vest that was intricately laid with jewels, and also in stitching in the vest were the names of the 12 tribes of Israel. And then on top of that, there was a breastplate, and the breastplate had stones that represented the 12 tribes of Israel. And then the culminating piece was a turban, a great big hat that was wrapped around his head that went up, and on the hat was a gold plate that was engraved with this phrase, "Holiness unto God." His outfit kind of said it all. This guy was God's representative in the world. And he represents something that happened in the story of Jesus that is really important. That the very people that God had chosen to be his people in the world had trouble seeing what God was doing in the world. The very person who represented the holiness unto God from God into the world failed to see it. How does that happen? How do godly people sometimes do ungodly things? How do God's representatives in the world miss what God's doing? And let's just be honest, how do we sometimes, after we have maybe sat in church for like forever and heard lots of really, really great but really, really long sermons, how do we, after we maybe have gone to Sunday school or been raised in the church or go through kind of all the religious steps that you're supposed to take, how does it somehow happen that we have trouble seeing, have trouble getting in touch with God's work in the world? It's just kind of part of the human condition, isn't it? It's possible that we don't see the very thing that God's doing right in front of us. Well, one of the reasons why that was tough was that he, as part of his family, had turned the religious life of the people into a family business. They made their living off of this. And that was okay. That was part of the law that prescribed that the priests could receive gifts, the gifts of the sacrifices, the food that came to the temple, and also gifts of tributes to the temple. But they had kind of taken it a step further, and they had started making as much money as possible. So wealth and power and status started to get in the way. Sort of the things that we all wrestle with. How do we make our way in the world? Well, these men and then who they represented started to take advantage of God's people. Money changers were put in the temple so that when people came to pay their temple tax, they would change the money for them. They would exchange that money. If anybody's ever been to a foreign country, you know how this works, and they usually put a little sort of fee on that to cover the cost. And the fee, as you came to bring your offering to God in the temple, imagine if you brought your offering to church and we said, that's great, now we're going to add 13%. Most of you would not like that very much. That's what these people did. But the regular worshipers had no choice. They had to do it. And then when people brought these animals that were going to be sacrifices, the priest charged an inspection charge on that as well, so that they can make a little bit more money off of that. But the law required that you had to bring your gift to the priest, and it had to be inspected to see if it was fit to be offered. Makes me think of a commercial that's out right now. It's of this little girl with a lemonade stand. Have you seen it? And it's about like the hidden charges, right, that can come up. And so she's got like lemonade for $1, but then when the guy tries to get his lemonade, it's like, what, $2.47 or something like that. And she starts to explain all the charges, the lawn fee, and just the different fees that get tacked on. And the guy says, I'm not doing that. No way. But God's people, as they came to worship, didn't have a choice. They had to. And that helps us understand what happens in the life of Jesus. One of the things that Jesus does is he overthrows the temple. He goes in and he turns the tables over for those money changers. And he says, you've turned God's house, which is supposed to be a house of prayer, into a den of thieves. Jesus did not like that, because wealth and money and power and taking advantage of people had gotten in the way of what God was doing. And a lot of scholars think that one of the main reasons Jesus went to the cross is because he confronted that. He overthrew those money changers in the temple, and he made the high priest mad. The high priest had sort of built his life around this, and Jesus called all of it into question, and that created a tension. And there are signs throughout the Gospels that became a problem. One of those, and we're going to go to, is John 11, where Jesus, in the start of his ministry, is getting attention for his teaching and his miracles, and the crowds are following him, and this was perceived as a threat. And what we hear from Caiaphas in John 11 helps us understand the real challenge. The chief priests and the Pharisees called a meeting of the Sanhedrin in response to Jesus. What are we accomplishing? What's going on here? Here's a man performing many signs, and if we let him go on like this, everyone will believe in him. And then the Romans will come and take away both our temple and our nation. And so Jesus was a major threat to them. And then one of them, named Caiaphas, who was the high priest, spoke up. You know nothing at all. Don't you realize that it's better for one man to die for the people than for the whole nation to perish? What does that mean? It means that before the cross, before the crucifixion, before Jesus was arrested, the decision had already been made. What must happen, that Jesus needed to die. And it happened not through the due process of law. It didn't happen through a jury of his peers. It happened in the head of one man, far ahead of the events of the crucifixion. One man had decided that the Son of God needed to die, and that man was supposed to be God's representative in the world. How does that happen? How do people miss out on the very thing that God is doing? Well, back in April of 2015, a marathon runner named Kendall Schlur won the Go St. Louis Marathon. She had gotten third place the year before, and according to NPR's coverage, she received a $1,500 check and a photo with Jackie Joyner Kersee, some of you will know who that is, at the finish line. There was a lot of prestige, as she's a famous runner. And the only problem was that as people started talking about her run, they mentioned that they had never actually seen her on the course. And the reason they hadn't seen her on the course is because she wasn't on the course. That she had slipped into the race late in the race and had gone just ahead of the leader and had won by cheating. And she's not the only person who has done this. In fact, in 2012, a Michigan dentist who has this whole professional life and so much going for him put it all on the line and called it all into question and really ended it, actually, by cheating not once and not twice, but several times, slipping onto the marathon course at the end of the race and started posting times under 3 minutes and getting a lot of attention, only to be found out that it was all a fraud, that he was cheating. Why would somebody do that? Well, I looked up some commentary on this, and people have been talking about it. And one of those people who've written an article is Amanda Lawden from the runningcompetitor.com website. She says that for competitive runners, you can see where this kind of would make sense. There's a lot of money and prestige involved in winning. But we see this going on not just with famous people, but also just regular folks who have been cheating. And some people think that because marathons have gotten so much attention lately, because they're the epitome of endurance and dedication and hard work and training, that people want that. They want to be seen as hardworking and dedicated and healthy and really, really the epitome of endurance, even if that means they don't actually do any of the things to get there. That they want to appear to be all these things, even if they aren't. And so this is what Ms. Loudon writes. These are people who don't want to be viewed as failures or compromised. They are completely wrapped up in their identity that they have in their own heads. This is what Brendan Manning says about the spiritual life. I'm going to put this on the screen. That the temptation of our time is to look good without being good. I'm going to say that again. The temptation of our time is to look good without actually being good. And that's the trap that Caiaphas fell into. He had all the clothes, he had all the titles, he had all the prestige, and he wanted to be seen as somebody who represented God, but he really was motivated by a lot of other things. His life lived in tension with that. He was really concerned about money and power and status. He was concerned about what he looked like from the outside, and he was concerned about playing politics. So Caiaphas did what every single one of us does to some extent or another. He justified, he rationalized. He felt that conflict and decided that he would have to fight for it, that he would have to somehow make up a version of what was right in his own head. He did what was wrong under the guise of doing what was right. He broke the Ten Commandments in God's name and had someone killed. It's like an episode of Seinfeld. I want to go to a really credible source. This makes me think of an episode of Seinfeld where George Costanza is trying to coach Jerry in how to beat a lie detector test. Has anybody seen that episode? And what does he say to him? He says, "Listen, Jerry, here's the trick. It's only a lie if you don't believe it's true." We can convince ourselves that things are true. It's only a lie if you believe it. We can all do that. And so how do we avoid that? How do we see what God's doing and be a part of it? That's really what we're here to celebrate today in the lives of these students who have been bringing their lives to the story of God week in and week out for 6 weeks, and really for a lot longer than that, as they have kind of placed their lives and compared that to the way of life that Jesus has described as the most important way. The way of love and service and sacrifice. And that's what we're going to be doing in this series. We're going to be comparing our lives to what we see with Jesus on the cross and the way of life that he demonstrates there. On the cross, we see a truth that we didn't see before. We see how Jesus exposes all those fake ways that we have of living, all those false things that are a part of our lives, and calls those into account. For those who worship money, Jesus lived as a homeless man, an itinerant teacher who died poor. For those of us who are caught up in power and status, Jesus relinquished all of that and just simply trusted God with his life. For those who are driven to look out for number one, Jesus lived for others. He lived selflessly and sacrificially. And that's why, in so many ways, Jesus shows us a completely different way of living, that he turns everything we know upside down. Or better said, maybe, he reveals that everything that we sort of believe is already upside down, and he starts to turn it right side up. What we want to do is turn things right side up. We want to see the right way to live, what's really important, and then to be able to see what God is doing and right in front of us and be part of it. We don't want to be like Caiaphas. We want to be like Christ, and we want to follow his example and his way in the world. And that's gonna present some challenges. Paul writes in 1 Corinthians, "For the message of the cross is foolishness to those who are perishing, but to those of us who are being saved, it is the wisdom, it is the power of God." And so this is what we want. We want to follow the way of Jesus. How do we avoid going down the wrong road in life? How do we avoid living two different sorts of lives? How do we avoid missing what God is doing in front of us? Well, we do it by what we're asking these young people to do, to keep going back to the cross and comparing our lives to what we find there, the way of Jesus that is completely different than the way that the world describes, and to bring our decisions and our actions and our attitudes and our lives into the light of the cross. And then little by little, over the course of time and maybe over a lifetime, to let that way of life, that truth, begin to define us. A friend of mine said recently, I've come to realize that Jesus didn't die on the cross to change how God thinks about me. Jesus died on the cross to change how I think about God. That's the challenge. God wants to change the way you think about him and to see everything in life through his love and his grace and his power, to lead us down a road of service and sacrifice rather than status and importance, to put monetary things aside, money aside, so that we can serve and give our lives away, so that we would find our lives by losing them, Jesus said, that we would gain our lives by giving them away. This is the call to the church, to give our lives away to the way of Jesus. And it's the call to these young people today who have come to be confirmed and to claim their faith for themselves. So I'm going to invite you to stand where you are. I'm going to invite